Welcome to this episode of Why Pals Tales from the Sweep Yacht Laundry. I'm here with beautiful Marion from Yacht Mermaid. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me. I'm super excited.
So we are kindred spirits. We're both podcasters. I like having a caster on a podcast. Obviously, our chat before the podcast began, we're like literally downloading what we've learned and all of that kind of stuff. And we do work in the same sphere, you know, promoting crew safety and wellness, and especially obviously for females and stuff like that. So I am super excited to have you on today and hear your story. No pressure. It better be good.
I think it is. I think it is. Probably not what people can't even imagine. So yeah.
This is the best thing about the podcast, because obviously we've known of each other a little while. We've spoke a few times, and you know, but I don't know your, you know, I love it because we get to what's your origin story? I suppose that's the best thing.
Yeah.
So lots of people will know you from Yacht Mermaids. Obviously, you've got your own podcast as well. So let's get into it. Before, if we get back in time, what was Marion doing before Super Yachts?
So I was actually living in Fort Lauderdale because I went to university in Fort Lauderdale for graphic design. So I was there. I don't know. Don't ask me how, but I never saw yachts, even though they were there all the time. My mind was in such a different space that it was almost like they were there and not there at the same time, until my last semester, where I actually met a yachty at a bar. And that's when this whole super yacht industry opened up for me, because I was like, oh, actually, yeah, I see. They have always been there, but I didn't even think of there's crew in this boat. There's people working. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't even think of that. It was such a foreign industry.
You're obviously living the student life, and obviously you're not from America originally?
No, I'm from Puerto Rico.
Okay, so you're like moving to a new country, student, like, why would you think of yachts, to be honest? Yes. You'd be having a great time, loving life.
Yeah, totally. And then I met this very obnoxious person. And I told his friend, hey, you know, like, take care of this person, your friend. And then actually the person that I told, you know, take care of your friend, I ended up dating him. And he was a deckhand on a super yacht. And that's when I met the crew. And I just started to, like, ask questions, because I was about to finish university and I was heading towards either Greenpeace or Peace Corps.
Wow.
And then the super yacht opened up, and I was like, well, I can get a cultural experience. I can travel, but I can still make money, because on Peace Corps and Greenpeace, you don't really make money, but you do get money credited towards your education, right? That you paid out throughout your education. So for me, it was like, okay, let's do this. You know, like, I didn't know anything about super yachts. If I would have known, maybe I wouldn't have actually taken down that road, to be honest.
But it's a big difference, you know. Yeah, Greenpeace.
Exactly.
Peace Corps, working on CBA yachts. One would say they're probably nearly the opposite.
But I had no clue. For me, it was like, oh, I'm going to be at service. Obviously, different ways of being at service. But for me, it was really more of, at that time, you know, being 20, it was more about the culture experience, because I wanted to become an installation artist, and I wanted to really more into the political cultural realm, just kind of like shaking things up and waking up consciousness for people. So for me, it was like having that cultural experience abroad, because obviously, you know, when you're so young, you need to have experiences in order to grow. So then the super yacht opened up. And literally, they left to go to the Med. So we dated for like that season that they were there in Fort Lauderdale. And they left 2 weeks later. I graduated. I took a STCW, did my stewardess course. And 2 weeks later, everything just happened like that week. And then basically within 2 weeks, I was on a boat. I was on a 150 footer. And it was the worst experience ever.
So I was thinking you were going to go into this like whirlwind romance. No, like I met this guy. And then I just, you know, disappeared to Europe and it was all amazing.
No. So obviously we were dating. I knew that he was leaving. So it was just for the time being. Like that wasn't even like a thing. He actually ended up marrying the second stewardess on board and we're all good friends. So that's really nice. But I went onto this boat in New York, and on this boat within, I was there for 3 months and I saw raped another stewardess. Cause I was actually I was a solo stool on 150 footer, obviously massive red flag.
Yeah,
but at the time I didn't know, right? And I was like, this is insane. Like, this is a lot of work. And I didn't really know what I was doing. And I got the job because I spoke Spanish and the manager of the state in Miami that they own and in New York, the apartment, she only really spoke Spanish, properly. So they wanted somebody that could communicate with her. So that's why they hired me. One, because obviously I was green, so I didn't know where I was going. I had no, clue about the anything, and two, because I spoke Spanish. So I got there and it was just like, what is going on? Like, what is happening here? So loads of drugs, loads of celebrities, got exposed to basically all the shit that is bad and negative about yachting within like the first 3 months.
Wow.
The last day, she would like scream at you, call you whore, call you names. And that's when I just like had it. And I said to her, like, I want my ticket. I want my money. I'm out. And I went to turn around and the owner like flicked me and turned me around and just went ballistic on me. And I was like, she was lucky that I was able to contain myself at that time. Because obviously being young and not knowing, I didn't care. I would just say to you whatever I thought. Like, for example, to give you an example, I went to her bathroom, clean everything, and she called me up a few minutes later and she's like, this is dirty, blah, blah, blah. And I looked at her. I was like, well, if you just brush your teeth and you spit, yes, of course it's going to get dirty because I cleaned it 10 minutes ago. I would never say that to an owner now. But at that time, I could care less.
You didn't know.
I could care less because she was being rude and disrespectful. So why would I be respectful to you as a human, you know? So yeah, that dynamic obviously has changed along the way. And I have a lot better boundaries now as well. And I educated in the industry, so I wouldn't choose that type of vessel. But just little things like that. And then
the soul stew thing is, you know, I think I was actually talking about this on another podcast because no stew with any experience would sign up for a soul stew position. And there's a reason.
Especially on 150 footer. Like, come on.
It's really, really, obviously really, really hard graft. It's also lonely. But there is this weird thing where they always take people with no experience because they know that they're just going to end up working you. You're going to end up being worked to death. You know?
And don't get me wrong, down the road, I did some solos to, jobs and I did enjoy them. But it was that, for me, it was like, okay, I do like this, but I prefer, being with more people around me. But that job obviously was a solo stew position because it was run unprofessionally. And then there was another girl next door on another boat. And I somehow, the mate or the deckhand knew her. So I basically begged the captain. I saw 7 captains in 3 months. That tells you everything. I begged one of the captains to bring her on board to help me because he was just like out of control. And because we had massive parties like every day, it was just crazy. And she did. And sadly, I don't feel guilty, but I feel like, in a way I brought her into that atmosphere. And when I decided to leave, they kept me for 2 weeks on board because I wanted my money. I was like, I'm not leaving until you pay me. Because I didn't know anything about yachting, but one thing I know is intuitively, if I leave, I'm not going to see my money. And basically I said that to the captain, I'm not leaving. I'm staying here and I'm not working until I see my money. So for 2 weeks that went on, still everything happened.
2 weeks.
Yeah, everything happened. I was just there. And then the day I left, they put me on a taxi at 1 a.m. in the morning because all of a sudden around midnight, 11 something, hell broke loose. And it was because one of the guests had sexually assaulted the other stewardess. I just went crazy and they didn't want to call the cops because they were drug dealing and all sorts of things. So basically they said, here's your ticket. Here's your, they gave me a check. Here's your taxi. Bye. That's how I ended up being able to get paid and leave the vessel.
Do you think even at that point they wanted you off so you couldn't back her up?
Probably. I mean, it was just
it
like
makes,
crazy.
It makes sense, you know. Because I was
a liability. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, for sure. I've seen things on board. So the cops came. They knew that I wouldn't not talk.
Well, you have to pay me more money. So, like, exactly. You know.
That was the first introduction to Yachty. And when I got on the plane, I was like, I'm never going back.
So your first experience wasn't great, but please tell me you went on to better and nicer things.
I left and I decided not to go back. And I started working as a graphic designer. And, you know, the universe obviously had other plans. And the first assignment that I got as a graphic designer was to create ads for yachts. And I was this is insane because I was actually at the time in Georgia because that's where my sister was going to school. So I went to stay with her because obviously I had finished in Florida. And I was like, really? Like ads for yachts? So I did that for a little bit. And then there was this itch, you know? And I was like, and I remember the mate telling me, like the third mate, I was on that boat, telling Marianne, this is not what yachting is. This is the bad side of yachting. I'm sorry that this is how you enter the industry, but he said to me, I wish that you could give it a go, you know, another go, because it could also be an amazing industry if you're with the right people and the right atmosphere. And I was like, okay, you know, I'll take that, you know, I'll take it, but I'm not sure if I'm going to act on it. Mm-hmm. So a few months into it, I was like, okay, I think I'm going to try it again, you know. And then basically a few bumps here and there, you know, did the solo stew deck cook thing. Please kill me now. I don't know how people do it. Like, I take my hat off. That definitely wasn't the road for me. And then I ended up getting a job on a 180 footer, a 55 meter as a second stew. And I stayed there for over 2 years. So it was such a good boat, so perfect, like very professionally. I mean, professionally compared to what I've seen. Obviously, there were things that needed to be improved, but it was from night to day. It was also run by a captain who used to be on the Navy. So there was a lot of structure. There was a lot of procedures. There was a lot of hierarchy, which a lot of people don't tend to like sometimes. But for me, it created safety. It was like, okay, there's structure, there's this, this is real, this is business, we're employers, here's the employee. So for me, it created safety. So I was able to just be there for, you know, a long period of time until I decided, okay, I think it's time to kind of move on because we were at anchor for 2 years. So it just, you know, it's, you know, it gets really tough. Yeah. Yeah, it gets really tough.
Why were you anchor for 2 years?
Because that's how they ran it. They didn't want to pay for the port, so they would just do runs. I didn't know anything else, so for me, it became the normal. So I didn't think it was like that big of a deal. But after two years, I was like, I think I would like to see something different. And then you know, obviously I went through many different vessels, worked with many different captains, and some good, some bad, you know, and everything in between. And that was basically 16 years on yachts.
So what were the, give us a couple of highlights. What are, you know, what are your pinch moments? What are you, you know, you think, you know, the moments that create the addiction to working on yachts? You know,
I think the fact that I could go to the beach on my break, or go to this random little city, you know, wherever I was at the time, just, you know, you could have that lifestyle. You know, I love the lifestyle of yachting, right? And for example, I remember being in, where were we? San Lucia, or no, the BVI's, I think it was. And all of a sudden, you know, the guests are off, and the captain that I had was really, he promoted us to go in the water and just kind of like refresh our mind and our bodies and that kind of thing. And I was just on the water floating. And I look around, and it's like these little mountains, beautiful, you know, Caribbean water. And I was like, these are the moments that make everything else worth it. Like this moment right here, right? And obviously your bank account growing and being able to, you know, to make more money than a lot of the people that you know at your age, you know? And yeah, I think those were the highlight moments. And obviously the people that you meet, you know, I have friends for life. And those were the biggest highlights.
It's one of those things, it's kind of freedom, but not freedom. Mm. You know, you are getting to see the world. So it's kind of a very traveler experience in a way, but it's not true freedom in a certain way. It's like, you know, travel with a safety net. You know, it's, you know, you've got that to fall back on. But it does, you know, one of the best things about, you know, boats is they don't generally go anywhere. Rubbish. You know, you get some rapey yards.
Yeah, I mean,
like period or two, but like they're always going to go somewhere beautiful. You know, there is always going to be that aspect to enjoy.
And the truth is, like, a lot of this time, you know, when boats, you get to go to these very VIP places that even if you had the money to, or the time to go, maybe you wouldn't even choose to go there. Or sometimes you don't even have access to those places, you know, because they're private islands or because they're private clubs and stuff like that. And you get to have that experience as well, you know, if you're able to, you know, actually experience them, because sometimes you're just looking through the portholes. But
obviously the first boat was a bit below. Were there any other moments, or what were the challenges for you personally whilst your time on yachts?
I was, for out of the 16 years, 8 of those, I was permanent crew member. And I usually tend to stay 2-3 years on each vessel that I worked on. So I have 16 years experience, but I don't have a lot of vessels on my CV because I tend to, like, you know, have longevity on them. And after 8 years of doing that, I burn out. And I'd been burning out, you know, the signs were there that it was happening slowly but surely, because burnout doesn't just happen tomorrow. It grows softly, but steadily. It grows into it, right? It develops.
You were the rotation wasn't a thing either. Like, I didn't have rotation.
No, I was there. It's 11 months, 1 month off. That's it.
Yeah. So, it's, you know, when we talk about burnout now, you know, individuals are on rotation, they don't, that's, you know, you want to try working back to back years with only technically, you know, 2 months off in 2 years.
Yeah, that's, exactly.
You know, it's like serving prison time.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. Yeah. I think, who was it? The guy from Pirates of the Caribbean, you know, the actor, I forgot his name. Johnny Depp. He wrote a whole thing that he said that being crew on yachts, it's literally like being a prisoner. It's, you know, he made that remark, and which is true, except the difference that he said was that we're choosing to be there. You know, we're not, obviously.
Well, you can leave at any time. You know, you can leave at any time.
So basically, yeah, that was the biggest challenge. Slowly, steadily going toward burnout, not knowing the signs of it, and just continuing to push. Obviously, prioritizing yachts and everybody else except me. And then until one day it got so bad that I was massively depressed, like with suicide ideation. My gut was completely gone. It felt like I was dying, to be honest. It felt like I was just like pieces of me were just like falling off. And I had to make the decision to leave the industry because I knew I couldn't. I remember, and I guess you said, you know, about the crazy story, maybe there'll be a crazier one, but I'm definitely going to share this one. Because this was my rock bottom moment when I realized something has to change. I was, we drop off charter. It was the last charter of the season in the Caribbean. And I was on watch, and I went and had a wine of glass on the dock with the crew next door and whatever. And then they went out to party and the crew went out to party. But one glass of wine, when you're that burnout, it will take you completely out. It will wipe you. And all I remember was telling the crew, I'm going to get a coffee. Went to get a coffee, and I didn't wake up until somebody woke me up. And I was literally, my entire cabin was flooded because I went to shower. I don't remember, but I went to shower and I pass out. And obviously my palm was covering the shower thing, you know, for the water to go down. So obviously everything got flooded. And I woke up by the crew, a crew member, like, wake up, you know? And I was so out of it. Anyway, I woke up, went to sleep, put towels, whatever. And I was like, I don't want to deal with it. And woke up in the next morning, and I went to the crew mess, missed my flight because I was leaving the next morning to go home for a week for like a little trip, missed my flight, had to rebook, went to the crew mess. And people were laughing and just saying like, oh, it's nothing, like just making it like nothing happened. And I thought, fuck, these people don't get it. These people don't see how much I'm suffering. These people don't see that I have put them in danger because I wasn't watch. And I wasn't, I wasn't able to do my job because of, you know, what I put myself through, you know, because I chose to have that drink. I obviously was burning out. I, you know, it was part of, you know, the whole thing came together and it collapsed. And for me, it was like that moment of like, they're so uncomfortable around what's happening to me. Because for me, it's like, I'm sure they could see I was struggling, but they didn't know how to approach it or if they could approach it, right? Because I was the chief stew. And that they just basically made it like a funny joke, you know? And I was like, okay, I need to leave and I need to take care of me because if I don't have my health, I cannot work, you know?
No.
So I packed my bags, I resigned, which was a hard thing to do because I had been there for like over 3 years and everybody wanted me to stay. And I was like, I just can't do it. And I left and I moved to Australia.
What? Like, because I'm thinking she's booked a flight home in this story. Yeah, like, she's going to go home and get some love. No, she's going to go and live in Australia.
Yeah, I was on that.
Where did Australia come from?
Because I had an Australian boyfriend prior to that. And I've been to Australia one time and I just felt like home to me, which is so odd because I'm from the Caribbean. And I just remember at the time I was late 20s and they only let you get like a working visa before you hit 30. And I was like, if I'm going to do this, it has to be now. Like, I can't hesitate. And I knew that somehow, intuitively, I knew that was going to be a healing place for me. So I just packed my bags, got my visa, and off I went. And I spent 2 years there.
It's quite funny that you say that Australia, like I did a lot of healing in Australia and New Zealand, the working holiday visa thing. I suppose that's true. Like, that's true travel, you know, not the yachty travel. That's, But yeah, it's cool down there. So yeah. were you healed? Did it give you the time and space to heal?
I mean, I think healing is a journey and it's a constant transformation. It's not like a one thing that you get to. But definitely, I got better and I recuperated my health physically, mentally, to the place where after 2 years, I said, okay, I can go back to boats. Because I wasn't done with yachting. I just knew I couldn't continue to do it the way I was doing it. So when I returned, I did yachting completely different. Completely different.
What do you mean by different?
I had boundaries in place. I knew myself better. I wasn't afraid to speak up. I wasn't afraid to ask for the support and get the support I needed, whether that be mental health or physically or whatever it was that I needed. During those 2 years, I reconnected with my womb and my menstrual cycle. So I started implementing menstrual rest on board. So this is something I teach now, and I teach it because I did it for like 8 years on board. Because I realized that my mental health was very much connected to my menstrual cycle. And this is something that, you know, people don't talk about often. So for me, that was like a game changer, really understanding my menstrual cycle and how to navigate and live cyclically, basically. So I did that, and I chose to only do, at the beginning, I chose to only do seasonal jobs because I knew I couldn't, I chose not to take long-term jobs because I knew it was going to be too much for me to handle to not get back into burnout. So I did seasonal for a few years, and then I decided, okay, seasonal is even too much for me. I'm just going to start doing freelancing. And for me, it was great because, for example, I had a boat that I freelanced for 4 years. So, you know, I had almost like a permanent job, but at my own, within my own
guidelines.
Yeah, exactly. Requirements. And that gave me the opportunity to do yachts, make the money, have the lifestyle I liked about yachts, but also have that freedom within it, you know, and being able to just educate myself in other realms and do other types of things that I wanted to do, you know, in order to at some point get out of yachting, right?
Yeah, yachting is, you know, it's one of those things you said, there's always another boat. You know, I think you can get when you're on board and you don't like it, but you get caught up in the fact, like, what I'm getting, there is always another boat. And I think with the way the industry is talking about mental health now, the burnout, you know, obviously with rotation and things like this, these are real, you know, there is a real, I think COVID probably brought it home as well, that realization that, you know what, it's not great to, you know, basically use the workforce like this. You'll get more out of them if you do recognize that, you know, if Shackleton can do it. I just watched a documentary on Shackleton going, you know, he knew that to keep morale, you've got to have the downtime. You've got to let people be people.
And that's the thing, like, I at the time when I decided to do the freelance thing, there was still not a lot of rotation. So I created my own rotation.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's amazing. But having that moment to, you know, in Australia to actually just, it's tuning into your authentic self. Like, who am I and what do I want? And I think that's what, I mean, it's not probably, you can't really do it on a boat because you're being told where and what to do. But that opportunity to go to another country and reinvent yourself, all of those structures that you've had since you were a kid, the town that you grew up, the country you're from, if you literally transplant yourself somewhere else, it's the ideal, you know, it's brutal, would you say? Like, I found it, like, parts of it was quite brutal to just sit in another country and you can be whatever you want. You can make any decision that you want.
Yeah.
But you've got to face the reality of who you are and whether all of that is good or not.
And I love the fact that you brought in authenticity and your childhood self, because that's really what I was basically doing in essence. I was healing my inner child. I was ripping all this mask that I had to put on to survive, to be able to navigate life, you know, when I didn't have the tools and resources. But now as an adult, I do have tools and resources. I can start reaping those masks off. And what's really left is, like you said, your authentic self, that essence of you that we forgot about it somehow, you know, and we just have to come back to it. Because really, I mean, every issue in life always leads back to that.
Yeah. I think with working on boats as well, you lose, you know, with lots of interviews, you can't, there is a, it's prime opportunity to lose yourself because you have so little time to do what you like to do. Well, anywhere, to be honest, anywhere that's not your usual environment, you're not with any true solo travels. You're not with any of your friends. Nobody knows you. You know, you can make up your own story about your life if you want to.
Yeah.
But it really is an opportunity to tune into, well, what do I like? And on board, I think one of the things that where women end up kind of like falling out of love with it is because they become so out of tune to what they like because so much of their life is predetermined. That's when you kind of get imposter syndrome, like, well, who the hell am I? What do I actually like doing? And then ultimately when you leave the industry, you're like, it can be even bigger. You know, it's like I'm trying to reinvent myself, but I didn't really know who I was when I jumped off and I thought that this would work.
I do want to say that, you know, you don't have to leave everything and do what I did because, you know, these are extreme circumstances. And if you feel called to do so, yeah, by all means do that. But that's, you don't have to actually heal and start doing these processes. Because for the next 8 years, I continue to heal being on board. I continue to learn more about myself. And what I really found was that yachting was the perfect mirror to see what was out of alignment within myself.
Yeah.
Because yachting is so extreme that it's going to show you everything that you need to start working on. It's just, you know, the outside world is like the mirror of your inner world at the end of the day. So any conflict that may arise, I chose to have support, you know, through different venues, and anything that would arise at the time, I would just get support and then we would work through it. And then I could realize, oh, this is what actually this is showing about myself. And I could, like, again, come back to that authenticity and choose differently. And hey, if I need to set a new boundary, okay, let me set it, you know? So I think it's possible to do it while you're on board, but you have to choose to do it.
Yeah.
And a lot of time, we don't choose to go into that healing mode until we are rock bottom. But I'm here to tell you, if you can avoid hitting that rock bottom, avoid it at all costs.
Well, you know, through adversity becomes, you know, genius or innovation or evolution even. Because I do, you know, obviously having heard your story a little bit, you know, it kind of is all leading towards, you know, what you've created. You know, you wouldn't have had the inspiration to create what you've created if you hadn't have had all of those experiences.
And the funny thing is that when I decided to leave yachting, which was at the end of 2019 in November, I was literally getting tons of jobs to, you know, as a chief steward to be on different boats to do the freelancing. And I was like, nope, I'm choosing not to. And basically it was scary because it's also choosing not to have that income as well.
Yep.
And the funny thing is that for, you know, the transition to get out of yachts, it wasn't like, oh, I'm going to get out and that's it. No, it took me years to be able to say today is the day. I would say out of those 8 years that I was freelancing, at least 4 of them were all about that transition because I was married to the yachting industry. And it was like a divorce that I had to go through and I had to grieve it. And I had to know that even if I left, it was going to be there. And it was like, I did tons of different healing stuff through it.
It was a messy divorce. It's always messy, to be honest. Like, all of us go through the same thing. You know, it's a life, you know, it's a whole life. You know, it changes bits of you. And you don't even realize the bits that have changed until you try and put that person into another life.
Yeah.
Doing it gradually, if it's possible, is probably the best way. Because otherwise you are changing too many fundamental parts all at the same time. So obviously you're freelancing. What were you doing? Like, so obviously in your spare time, you kind of been like laying around sunning yourself in between freelance jobs.
Well, I was freelancing.
There was an idea of what you wanted to do next. Like
while I was freelancing, I was educating myself about, you know, more of the trauma, inner child, somatic therapist, all that, because that's basically my other location. Because I never intended to create Yachts Mermaids. I never intended to serve the yachting industry in this way. That was not my plan. That was not my intention. My intention was, when I leave, I'm going to dedicate myself to serving women who are in a healing process, who have been traumatized, whether that be sexually or small T traumas, you know, from childhood. That was my intention. That's what I was doing, putting my money in, putting my effort, putting my time. But the universe had a different plan. and I still do that. Of course, I do have that business as well. It's called Femme Rewild. But I also brought a lot of that into what I do today. And which is kind of what I do in my mentorships mainly. And I just kept getting in 2013, which I wasn't even like really trying to get out of yachting at that stage. I just kept, you know, people kept asking me for my management system that I have created, you know. And I was like, you know, just giving it away for free or whatever. And then I was like, wait, it took me years to like figure this out, you know, to make it this good that I could go on any boat and it runs properly. So I started selling it. But I didn't market it. It wasn't like, you know, it was just there. I don't even know how people were buying it, to be honest. I don't even know how people knew about it. But it just kept happening. And then in 2019, it was very clear because more people kept asking. I was like, okay, if I'm obviously this is not something I want to do consciously. That's not something I'm wanting to do, but everything is redirecting me to do something with this. And that's how Yachts Mermaids got created. But, you know, I didn't want Yachts Mermaids to just be a management system for chief stewardess. It had to have meaning. It had to have something, you know, substance, right? And that's when I started doing the support directory. And that's when the universe opened me to the Yachty International Radio platform. Rhea contacted me and said, hey, would you do Uncensored, the podcast? And I was like, sure, why not? And that's when we started talking about all the things that happen on board that people don't want to talk about, like sexual assault, sexual harassment, bullying, whatever, you know, mental health and everything in between. So Yachts Mermaids started shifting from what it started as a management system to what it is today, which is really an educational and empowering platform for specifically women, you know. Obviously, all yacht crew are welcome, but that's my niche, right, to support women. And it's been 7 years now. You know, and since it actually was born into Yachts Mermaids, you know, I mean, 5 Yachts Mermaids and I don't even know, I have to do math. But 2019, that's when I decided, okay, at the end of the year, I was like, I'm going to go all in. I can't have one foot in, one foot out. I have to go.
So you committed.
Yeah. You know, it was almost like sink or swim, yeah. But I floated and swam. Yay. And enjoyed it. Yeah.
Is the injury, obviously one of the things we're kind of kindred spirits on is the issues that are going on in the industry, you know, and the industry is amazing. It is the best time of your life. But one of the things I think and why it's important that somebody like you exists to highlight these issues is when it goes wrong, it generally goes wrong in like so badly, yeah. You know, it becomes very dangerous or, you know, whatever you're talking about, but the industry even in these scenarios, they is still reluctant to talk about things, mm-hmm. You know, don't ruin the profile of the boat. We don't want that to come out. So we'll get kind of swept under the carpet.
Yeah.
I mean, I really, you know, I love Rhea. She has brought us all together. Considering she doesn't really put her face anywhere, she's like pushing us all out there to cover really good things that need to be covered. But like you said, the industry isn't keen on talking about the ugly bit, you know. And how can who supports? And it is complicated, you know. Before we came on the podcast, obviously, me and yourself talk about like quite intense subjects, like getting down to the technicalities of, you know, insurance for boats and health and stuff like that. Looking back at your career and then looking at what you're obviously seeing now, do you think it's getting better?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, when I started, social media wasn't even a thing. You know, you would go to Smallwoods in Fort Lauderdale and drop your resume. And they had like a board and a table, and you would get jobs like that or through an agency. Now social media has blown up, and even though it has obviously its darkness, right, because there's a lot of scammers through it and, you know, all that, it also has opened up the opportunity for us to talk about what's not okay and talk about what could potentially be done to be more supportive of our work environment, you know, and our safety on board. Because we can talk about all the things that are wrong, but if we're not really, and this is where my advocacy comes in, where I'm not only just talking about the issue, I'm actually talking to like unions and ICE One and all, you know, PYA and all these other people to really say, okay, what are we going to do about it? Mm. Enough talking, right? Like, how can we actually start doing something? Who's the one in charge? Who's the one actually in there helping us create change? Okay, let's give them better ideas, because obviously the ones that they have had either are not good or haven't been implemented. So how can we start moving the needle? And it doesn't happen tomorrow, sadly.
it doesn't happen like next year.
Exactly. But I have seen, like, for example, there was such a disconnection between yachting and the maritime industry. We were completely disconnected from the maritime industry to the point that even us as yachties, we call ourselves yachties. We don't call ourselves seafarers, but we are, in essence, seafarers. And everything that is under the seafarers regulation policy should apply to us, yet it doesn't, because we're on the branch of pleasure vessels, right? So there's this such a disconnection created, obviously, by the hierarchy for a purpose, right? Because the whole industry is about being isolated.
Well, ego as well, you know, like, it's not, I wouldn't probably put it straight. It will be like, well, we're not. You know, we're not seafarers, we're yachties, you know, we wear exactly some posh things. So, you know, the ego.
Is the ego, but it's really, the ego is fed by isolation, you know, mm-hmm. because the whole industry is, how can I be so private, which actually privacy equals you have to be isolated to a certain extent, that we have isolated everything about the industry. And when you isolate something, it opens up the door for a lot of darkness to also come through.
Yeah.
So, yeah. You know, advocacy is a huge thing that I'm, you know, proud of, and obviously something that I continuously work on, because I think that's the key. And the fact that I've been able to collaborate with ICE One on, you know, the fact that ICE One actually said, hey, we care, and they opened in 2019 a Jack Crew helpline, you know, and that people within the industry like Hills Robinson is actually putting the money for us to have that helpline. That wasn't something that I was... in my career was available. I had to pay mm-hmm. out of pocket to get the support I needed. And it was kind of also not ideal, because when you're talking to somebody that doesn't understand the yachting industry or the maritime industry, they're almost like, what? They can't even comprehend it. Because what becomes the normal to you is something so abnormal and not even possible to even like understand sometimes if you haven't been through it. So the fact that now we have Jack Crew Helpline, the fact that now, you know, obviously, what do you call it? Nautilus have been for 14 years with us. But like I told him yesterday, I didn't even know about you until like 4 or 5 years ago. I spent my whole life without knowing there was a union supporting us, because obviously their marketing effort hasn't been there, right?
No. And so, you could probably, I would argue that ICE One perhaps should, you know, these entities need to make themselves aware in a completely different way. You know, there really needs to be, I mean, obviously, like I mentioned to you before we started recording, I'd been to the Mets Forum. And I think we're getting close to the consolidation of all of these entities into a clear framework, you know, that crew will, you know, very simple, keep it clean. These are the people that you need to have in your pocket at any one time. And it will just make your, you know, your seeing experience even better than it is.
Yeah.
We're getting closer to it. We're not quite there.
Absolutely. You know, but like for over two years, I have worked on the back along with IZONE. I started this on my own like 3 years ago, but then I brought IZONE because obviously I needed support. And working with other people, like you said, you know, prior to the podcast, let's not reinvent the wheel. If there's something else working somewhere else, let's just bring it into the industry. And obviously, because I'm very passionate about specifically SASH, sexual assault and sexual harassment, and advocacy about that, I started looking at what's actually working outside. How are people trying to support the victims, right? And or survivors, I should say. And evidence, because lack of evidence means you're not going to be able to actually take legal steps, right? So there's a lot of things that are working, include, you know, either actually with technology, but it takes a lot of money, it takes millions of dollars. Yeah. But at the same time, I'm kind of like, we're in an industry where money's never an issue, really.
Well, you say that. I mean, we could do a whole podcast episode about where money goes.
Right, because if you are like, it's at least it's seen, right, as a billionaire, you know, multi-million.
Maybe we need to do a podcast episode, you know, about the whole industry and our views. We might perhaps do a Christmas special where we just let go and see how.
The point of this is that there's a lot of people, including myself, and a lot of people that we don't even know about that are doing a lot of things behind the scenes that are not doing it for recognition, but that you might not know about it until like 10 years down the road. And then all of a sudden something happens that changes everything. And those people that were working for it for 10 years, those are the ones that were actually creating that change, you know? So obviously for me, education is a huge thing, because when you don't have education, you can't empower yourself to advocate for yourself. So that's one of the things that obviously I'm, you know, a big fan of. And, you know, through podcasts, right? That's what we do. So, you know, the industry definitely is a lot better. We are more outspoken as crew members, which usually tend to not happen back in the day. You know, the industry is also getting bigger, and that means the regulations and policy we're going to have to start being starting to put in place. So for me, the bigger the yachts, better. Let's do it. Get the bigger.
Well, talking of bigger, so where in the next 5 years, where is Yacht Mermaids? What are you up to? Like, let's ask the universe. This is a projection.
I don't know.
What's going to happen? What's your plan?
I mean, 5 years, that's too far for me to see. But what I can tell you is next year, my word is action. And I'm actually... I'm come from an island, right, from Puerto Rico. So there's a lot of people serving the green crew outside of, you know, my island, internationally, let's say. And I really think that is such a good, you know, the superyacht industry is such a good opportunity for us, for people. And, you know, as a career. And I want to bring that to the, you know, to my people, but I don't want to do it as a, like, oh, this is like a backpacking experience kind of thing. This is a career and it has to be taken seriously, and you have to know the risk before you join it. And then you can choose wisely if this is potentially something you want to go down the road with or not. And I met David Hammond, which is a lawyer and the creator or co-creator of the, Seafarers Rights. And, anyway, he introduced me to another company, let's call, called Progressive Crew. And I love what they're doing. I love that they're changing. Basically, their mindset is to create, to shift the industry into a real business, you know, like career. And not just like a random thing you go do in France and then, you know, something that happens and then you leave, you know? So I'm definitely going to start collaborating with them to bring that to, you know, that piece to my country. So that's definitely happening next year. And I'm also collaborating with Karine, the crew coach, to bring more of awareness with the mental health thing. I want to get more involved with boat shows and, like you said, you know, different forums. So that's definitely something I want to.
We need to get you a ticket. You know, I like to see your face in Europe. I think it would be great. Me and you could talk for a long time. But I do think we should perhaps booking another one soon. Now we've heard obviously your story and where you're going. I think we could definitely do with an episode just talking about the state of play. And I also find with these conversations, it's quite creative, you know, you do get more ideas, you know, and work out more. And that's what I hope for 2025 is, you know, true collaboration to fix things. I think we are getting closer and closer to that. So absolutely. Yeah, 2025 would be exciting. So lastly, obviously we always finish the podcast. Three bits of advice to your younger self, or a lady in her 20s. What are your three pearls of wisdom for her?
I think the three things that I would advise myself and obviously anybody else would be: your worth doesn't come from anything that I do or external to me. It's inherently yours, mine, which means we're good enough no matter what. That's super important because I think most of the issue stems from that wound of not being good or of not feeling good enough. But when you come back to your authentic self, you really understand that that is authenticity, understanding your worth. That is inherently yours. Also, know your boundaries, your non-negotiables, your negotiables, and speak them, you know, set them. That's super important. And I think the last advice would be, if you're a woman, educate yourself about your menstrual cycle, because your fertility years is just part of your journey as a woman. Then perimenopause comes, then menopause comes. And it can be really, really hard time. I'm currently in perimenopause, and it can be very challenging, especially when you don't understand your body, when you don't understand your cycle, when you're so disconnected to your womb, which is really your creative energy. It can be really, really challenging. And if you start doing that now, your next, you know, half of your other of your life as a woman is going to be so much smooth and really empowering, you know, because you don't have to go through, you're not going to battle yourself. You're just going to be able to like actually ride the wave and enjoy it as I am doing now. So yeah.
You're enjoying perimenopause.
Yes.
You're literally the first person that's ever said that.
Yes.
I mean, when we record next time, I will check in and go, are you still enjoying it?
Yes, I actually am. And I think I will, because I'm educated. I have the resources. I have the tools. I know how to. I have my hormones already level now. I'm doing all the lifestyle changes that I needed to do, which actually I had already been doing for years. So I can see how it can be really, really bad, because for 8 months was really hell. But immediately I was able to flip it, because I wasn't going to be, you know, my menopause is not my mother's menopause. It's different because I have tools and education. So I say, don't be afraid of it. It's actually a great time if you actually have the education and the resources and you take care of your body and give it what it needs, basically. Because the next 50 years is empowering, you know?
Well, I will take note. I'll be calling you the first time. How do I enjoy this?
I just recorded a perimenopause episode with my health coach. It's coming out in January. So, yeah.
Oh, nice. So we can
tell all about it.
So to finish up, do you have a crazy story that you can tell. It can be good, bad, or ugly. I've already said
pretty crazy stories. I don't think it's a crazy story, but I think it's a story worth telling, I guess. I always said I'll never date a yachty, ever. Like, I used to just date, like, people outside of boats. And when I was dating yachties, usually have been people on other boats, you know, only like one or two people on the boat. But obviously that never turns out right, at least for me. And I was so like, nope, it's not going to happen. And on my last vessel before I left the industry, I actually met my partner. And he's a captain, and we've been together for almost 7 years. So never say never. Yeah, it happens.
You can find love on board. Love on board. After all, yeah. All of the trying, you get love.
I had this different vision, but it's not what I needed. You know?
Well, that's lovely, and thank you for sharing. And thank you for being on. My podcast. I really appreciate you coming on and telling your story. I do think we need to perhaps do an episode about some stuff. It's always very interesting talking to you, and I think we could get into some nitty-gritty.
Oh yeah.
And I think everybody would enjoy it, you know. I would love to have you on again if we'd be up.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. Thank you for having me and allowing me to share my story.
No, I think it's important, you know, because what you're trying to do, you can get so caught up in it. And I, you know, everybody says with the stuff nowadays, everybody needs to know the reason. And I think it's, you know, it's the authenticity again, you know, podcasts and things like that. The most genuine, authentic podcasts get listened to because they come from a place of passion and they come from a genuine place. Your podcast is brilliant, a bit brutal at times, but brilliant.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Thank you. It's been an absolute privilege to have you on, and we will have you on again. For anybody listening to this podcast, if you've enjoyed this episode, we do have a lot more. If you're wanting more information about Yacht Mermaids, all of the links and appropriate connections will be in the bio. And I'm sure Marianne would be very happy to speak to you. If you've enjoyed this episode, there's more to choose from. But until the next episode, I will bid you goodbye.
Thanks.